One slip and the deadly needle would have penetrated her skin, killing her instantly. When they discover I am not carrying a daughter... The intensely black room spun slowly, as if connected to the carousel in the Imperial Garden. She lost her sense of direction and place, until she realized she was following Moheim through shadows into a tunnel of light. The two women emerged into a large, bright room. The floor beneath them was a projection screen filled with a dizzying forest of words. Moheim said, "These are names and numbers depicting the genetic programs of the sisterhood. See how they all branch from a core bloodline? This is the line that culminates, inexorably, in the Kwisatz Haderach, at its pinnacle." The floor glowed. The Reverend Mother gestured, demonstrating where Jessica fit in. The young woman saw her own name, and above that a name designating her birth mother, Tanidia Nerus. Possibly real, or more likely, a code designation. The sisterhood held so many secrets. The bonds between birth parents and children did not exist among the Bene Gesserit. One name, among others, surprised Jessica. Hasimir Fenring. She had seen him in the Imperial Court, a strange man always whispering in the Emperor's ear. On the chart, his bloodline approached the desired pinnacle, but tapered off to a genetic dead end. Noting her scrutiny, Moheim said, "Yes, Count Fenring was very nearly our success. His mother was one of us, carefully chosen, but his breeding ultimately failed. He became a talented but useless experiment. To this day, he does not know his place among us." Jessica sighed, wishing her own life could be less complicated, with straightforward answers instead of deceits and mysteries. She wanted to give birth to Leto's son, but now she knew an ancient house of cards had been built upon this one birth. It was not fair. She could not endure this sensory projection for much longer. Her burdens were already immense and so very private that she could discuss them with no one. She needed time to think, a desperate feeling. She wanted to be away from the scrutiny of Moheim. Finally, the memory crystal stopped glowing, and Jessica found herself once more on the slowly spinning carousel bench in the Imperial Garden. High over their heads, stars encrusted the roof of the night sky. She and Reverend Mother Moheim sat in a pool of glow-globe illumination. Inside her belly, Jessica felt the baby kick, harder than ever before. Moheim extended her hand, palm open, over the concubine's protruding stomach and smiled as she too felt the unborn baby kick. Her normally flat eyes twinkled. "Yes, it is a strong child. One with a great destiny." We are trained to believe and not to know. Zen Sunni aphorism. Dressed in a wide-sleeved ambassadorial day coat in order to fit in with the imperial court, Peter de Vries stood furtively at the back of the crowd, scrutinizing dignitaries as they watched the proceedings in the imperial audience chamber. Amentat could learn a great deal in the thick of activity. He had crept close, unobtrusively, until Duke Leto's pregnant concubine stood in front of him in the company of Margaret Fenring, young Princess Irulan, and two other Bene Gesserit sisters. He could smell the Atreides whore, saw the golden light playing off her bronze hair. Beautiful. Even pregnant with Leto's whelp, she remained desirable. Using his diplomatic credentials, de Vries had positioned himself so that he could observe Jessica and pick up any bits of conversation that might prove useful in planning the bold act he had in mind. High on his golden lion throne sat Shaddam IV, listening to the Lord of House Novabruns, who had formerly requested that the fief of Zanovar be transferred away from House Taligari to his own holdings. Though the Emperor's Sardaukar had turned the main cities on Zanovar into blackened scars, Lord Novabruns believed he could still mine the area for valuable raw materials. To strengthen his case, the enterprising nobleman greatly overestimated the resulting tax revenues his new income would generate for House Corino. Noticeable in their absence, the disgraced House Taligari had not even been permitted to send an emissary to the discussion. De Vries found it all very amusing. On Shaddam's left, Lady Anirul's matching, though smaller, throne remained empty. Chamberlain Redondo had made the usual excuses that the Emperor's wife was not feeling well. A gross understatement, and everyone at court knew it. According to rumor, she had gone quite mad. Peter De Vries found that even more amusing. If the Lady Anirul had suffered some sort of mental breakdown, if she was in fact violent, it would be particularly effective and virtually untraceable to House Harkonnen if the twisted Mentat could somehow convince her to strike out against the Atreides whore. For months now, following the unfortunate demise of his predecessor, Callow Wills, De Vries had served as the interim Harkonnen ambassador. During that time, he had lurked in the palace shadows, rarely speaking to anyone, maintaining a low profile. Day after day, he observed the activities of the court and analyzed the interactions of various personalities. Oddly, the pregnant Jessica was constantly surrounded by other sisters, like clucking hens, which made no sense at all. What were they up to? Why should they be so overprotective? It would not be easy to get to her, or to the Duke's baby. He preferred to kill Jessica while she was still pregnant, thereby accomplishing both murders in a single stroke. But so far, he had seen no opportunity. And the Mentat had no intention of sacrificing his own life for the Baron's benefit. He wasn't that loyal to House Harkonnen. Peering over the shoulder of a man in front of him, De Vries spotted Gaius Helen Mohiam standing in her usual position, off to one side of the Emperor, where she could be called upon to perform her truth-sayer duties. Even at this distance, with the intervening people and activities, Mohiam locked gazes with him, a dark-eyed, venomous stare. Many years before, De Vries had used a stunner on her, so that the Baron could impregnate her with the daughter the Bene Gesserit had demanded of him. The Mentat had gloated then, and ever since had harbored no doubt Mohiam would kill him if ever given the chance. Suddenly he felt other eyes on him, and saw more of the robed women lurking in the crowd, pressing closer. Uneasy, he backed into the swirl of the crowd, away from Jessica. Like all truth-sayers, Gaius Helen Mohiam considered the interests of the Bene Gesserit to be paramount, above even those of the Emperor. Now the sisterhood's highest priority was to protect Jessica and her child. The furtive presence of the Harkonnen Mentat caused Mohiam great concern. Why did Peter De Vries take such an interest in Jessica? He skulked around the perimeters, obviously spying on her. This was an especially sensitive time, with the day of her delivery fast approaching. Mohiam decided to take another step to keep the Mentat off balance. Suppressing a smile, she flashed a hand signal to a sister at the rear of the audience chamber, who in turn whispered in the ear of a Sardaukar guard. Mohiam could use an obscure legal precedent still on the books. A true Mentat probably had them memorized already, but De Vries was no true Mentat. This one had been created and twisted in Tleilaxu tanks. The uniformed soldier marched into the crowd while Lord Novabruns continued his audience with the Emperor, explaining mineral resources and excavation techniques. The guard grabbed DeVries's collar as he tried to slither toward the back of the audience chamber. Three guards came to assist, stifling the Mentat's struggles and objections as they hauled him toward a side entrance. The scuffle was over in moments, causing only minimal disturbance during the Lord's impassioned speech. The court proceedings continued. On his throne, the Emperor looked bored. Mohiam slipped through an alcove and circled around to meet the struggling prisoner in the corridor. "I have requested a full review of your ambassadorial credentials, Peter DeVries. Until this security check is completed, you will not be allowed in the audience chamber while the Padishah Emperor is discussing matters of state." DeVries froze as he pondered the assertion. His narrow face took on a look of disbelief. "Preposterous. I am the formerly charged ambassador of House Harkonnen. If I am not allowed in the Emperor's presence, how can I possibly perform my services in the Baron's name?" Mohiam leaned closer to him. Her eyes narrowed to slits. "It is highly unusual for a Mentat to be placed in an ambassadorial position." DeVries looked at her, assessing what he considered to be a petty power play. "Nevertheless, all the proper forms have been completed and approved. Callow Wills was recalled, and the Baron trusts me to take his place." He attempted to straighten his clothing. "If your predecessor was recalled, how is it that no travel documents were ever filed? How is it that Wills himself never signed the order rescinding his appointment?" DeVries smiled with stained lips. "There! So you see evidence of his incompetence? Is it any wonder that the Baron wished to place a more reliable person in such an important position?" She gestured to the guards. "Until this matter can be thoroughly investigated, this man is not to appear inside the audience chamber, or anywhere within view of Emperor Shaddam." She gave a condescending nod to the Mentat. "Unfortunately, such a process may take months." The guards acknowledged the Emperor's truth-sayer, and glared at DeVries, as if he might be a threat. At her command, they left the two alone in the corridor. "I am tempted to kill you now," Mohiam snapped. "Do a projection, Mentat. Without your concealed neural stunner, you have no chance against my fighting abilities." DeVries rolled his eyes comically. "Am I supposed to be impressed by the bluster of a schoolyard bully?" Now she got down to business. "I want to know why you are on Kaitane, and why you have been hovering so close to Lady Jessica." "She is a most attractive woman. I notice all the beauties of the court." "Your interest in her is excessive, and your games are tiresome, witch. I am on Kaitane merely to handle important business for Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, acting as his legitimate emissary." Mohiam did not believe him for a moment, but he had dodged her question and spoken no outright lie. "How is it that you have filed no motions, attended no committee meetings? I would say you are not much of an ambassador." "And I would say that an emperor's truth-sayer should have more important things to do than monitor the comings and goings of one minor representative of the Landsrad." DeVries looked down at his fingernails. "But you are right. I do indeed have vital duties. Thank you for reminding me." Mohiam detected subtleties in his body language that showed he was lying. She gave him a scornful smile as he walked off a bit too quickly. She was convinced of his intention to harm Jessica, and perhaps the child. Mohiam had put him on notice, though. She hoped DeVries would try nothing foolish. If, however, he failed to heed her warning, she would be happy for an excuse to eliminate him. Out of the damnable witch's sight, DeVries removed his torn coat and flung it at a passing servant in a white housecoat and trousers. When the man leaned down to retrieve the garment, the Mentat kicked him in the back of the head, just hard enough to render him unconscious without killing him. One had to keep in practice. He snatched his coat from the floor, leaving no evidence, and stalked toward his office. Why? Why did the witches consider Jessica so special? Why had the Emperor's wife summoned Leto's concubine here to the Imperial Court? Just to give birth to a brat? Facts slid around in his mind, clicked into place. Moheim herself had been assigned as the breeder cow when, 20 years ago, the witches had blackmailed House Harkonnen into giving them a daughter. So the Baron had raped her, quite obligingly. Peter de Vries had been there himself. That daughter would be almost exactly Jessica's age. In the hallway outside the office that he had commandeered from Callow Wills, de Vries stopped in his tracks, his mind locked into the intense focus of a first approximation analysis. He leaned against a stone wall. He assessed Jessica's facial features, looking for the faintest echoes of parentage. A great rush of information assailed him. The twisted Mentat slumped to the floor, with his back to the wall, and made an extraordinary connection in his mind. Lady Jessica is herself the Baron's daughter, and Moheim is the birth mother. Snapping out of his trance, he noticed a concerned diplomatic aide approaching, but he struggled to his feet and waved her off. Stumbling into his office, he passed his secretaries without a word and disappeared into the main room. His brain continued to hum, whirling from one probability to another. Emperor Shaddam played his own political games, but didn't see the intrigues right before his eyes. With a satisfied smile, the Mentat realized what a wonderful weapon this new theory could be. But how best to use it? Before allowing yourself to celebrate, take the time to ascertain whether good tidings are actually the truth, or simply what you want to hear. Advisor to Fondiel III. No name given. After a long and tedious session with Lord Novabruns and the other supplicants in his throne room, Shaddam was exhausted, anxious to get back to his offices to sip a quiet drink. Perhaps even some of Duke Leto's fine Caladan wine. Later he might go down to the labyrinthine imperial steam pools beneath the palace, where he could play with his concubines, though he did not feel in a particularly amorous mood. He was astonished to find Hasimir Fenring waiting for him in the office. "Why aren't you on Ix? Didn't I send you there to supervise production?" Fenring hesitated just a moment, then smiled. I had important matters to discuss with you, personally. Shaddam looked around furtively. Is something wrong? I insist that you tell me the truth. My decisions depend on it. Fenring paced the room. I bring you good news. Once it is released, we won't hold any more secrets. In fact, we will want the entire Imperium to know. He smiled, his overlarge eyes gleaming. My Emperor, it is perfect. I have no more doubts. Amal is all we could have hoped for. Taken aback at Fenring's enthusiasm, Shaddam sat down at his desk and grinned. I see. Very well, then. All of your doubts were unwarranted, as I suspected. Fenring bobbed his large head. Indeed, I have looked closely at all of Master Researcher Ajitika's facilities. I watched the production in the axolotl tanks. I have tasted the Amal myself, and have performed a number of tests, all of which were successful. He fumbled in the front pocket of his formal frock coat, and withdrew a small packet. See, I have brought back a sample for your own use, sire. Uneasy, Shaddam took the packet. He sniffed. Smells like melange. Yes. Taste it, sire. You will see how excellent it is. Fenring seemed just a bit too eager. Are you trying to poison me, Hasimir? The spice minister reeled backward in surprise. Your Majesty! How can you think such a thing? He narrowed his eyes. Naturally, you must realize I have had ample opportunities to murder you over the years, Well, that's true enough. Shaddam held the sample up to the light. I will taste it myself, if that will put you at ease. Fenring reached forward, but Shaddam took the packet away. Enough, Hasimir. That is all the reassurance I need. The Emperor touched a bit of the powdery substance to his tongue, then some more, and finally upended the entire portion into his mouth. In supreme ecstasy, he let the amal dissolve on his tongue, feeling the familiar tingle of melange, the energy, the stimulus. He smiled broadly. Very good. I can't tell any difference. This is incredibly good. Fenring bowed, as if taking credit for the whole project. Do you have any more? I would like to start using it myself to replace my daily spice. Shaddam looked in the packet, as if searching for tiny crumbs in the corners. Fenring took a half step away. Alas, sire, I was in a great hurry and could bring only this tiny amount. However, with your blessing, I will tell Master Researcher Ajitika that he may continue full-fledged production without further doubts from the crown, I think that will speed things up considerably. Yes, yes, Shaddam said, waving his hands. Go back to Ix and make sure there are no further delays. I've waited long enough for this. Yes, sire. Fenring seemed very anxious to get away, but the Emperor hardly noticed. Now, if only I can find a way to eliminate the spice from Arrakis, Shaddam mused. Then the Imperium will have no choice but to come to me for Amal. He tapped his fingers on the desk, already deep in thought. Fenring bowed at the door to the Emperor's private offices and departed. Once in the hall, the face dancer maintained his impersonation until he could get far enough from the palace. Other Tleilaxu remained at the Khitane court, planted there by Ajitika himself. But the face dancer would be glad to return to Xuta. Shaddam had heard the news he wanted to hear, and Master Ajitika could now continue his work unhindered. The Master Researcher's great plan was nearing its fruition. When you feel the pressures of limitations, then you begin to die in a prison of your own choosing. Dominic Vernius, Ikaz Memoirs. Deep in the suboid warrens, Kater led Romber and Gurney to a large rock-hewn room. Long ago it had been an overflow storage chamber, but with dwindling food supplies, there were now many such empty areas. During the first night there, Romber and Gurney had kept out of sight, discussing strategy. Because of the highliner delay, now they had less time than they had hoped. In a whispered rush of words under the faltering light of a waning glow globe, Kater told Romber about the sabotages he had committed over the years, how surreptitious Atreides' assistance had helped him strike crippling blows against the invaders. But Tleilaxu cruelty, as well as an increase in illicit Sardaukar troops stationed here, had stolen all hope of release from the Ixian people. Romber had no choice but to report the sad news that his navigator brother, Demur, had died from tainted spice, although he had lived long enough to save a highliner full of people. I knew something had gone wrong, Kater said in a bleak voice, not wanting to say anything about Christine. I was talking to him just before it happened. Hearing of Kater's experiences, the Ixian prince could not conceive how this solitary terrorist, this intensely loyal subject, had survived so much despair. The strain had nearly driven him mad, yet this man continued his work. But things would change. On Ix, Romber had plunged into his new obsession with fiery-eyed enthusiasm. Tesha would have been glad to see it. Before the break of artificial dawn the next day, he and Gurney slipped back up to the surface, dismantled the rest of the camouflaged combat pod, and carried down the hidden weaponry and armor components. It would be enough for a small armed uprising, provided the material could be distributed effectively, and provided they could find enough fighters. Inside the private, rock-walled chamber, Romber stood like a figurehead. For days, word had been spread that he was back. Now, awed people, carefully screened by Kater and Gurney, found excuses to be away from their assignments and trickled in to see him, one by one. The very presence of the returned prince gave them hope. They had heard promises for years, and now the rightful Earl Vernius had returned. Romber looked out at the huddled workers, still waiting to enter the chamber. Many of them were wide-eyed. Others had tears on their faces. "Look at them, Gurney. They are my people. They will not betray me." Then he had formed a wan smile. "And if they do turn against House Vernius, even after what the Tleilaxu have done here, then perhaps it is not worth such a struggle to win back my home." The furtive people continued to arrive, reaching out to shake the mechanical hand of the cyborg prince as if he were a holy resurrection. Some dropped to their knees. Others stared him in the eyes as if challenging his ability to bring freedom back to the downtrodden people. "I know you have been disappointed many times before," Romber said, in a voice that sounded much older, much more confident than Gurney had heard before. "But this time you will have victory on Ix." As he spoke, the people listened attentively. Romber felt wonder at this, and a tremendous sense of responsibility. "For the next few days you must watch and wait. Prepare for your opportunities. I don't ask you to endanger yourselves, not yet. But you will know when the time is right. I can provide no details, because the Tleilaxu have many ears." The nervous gathering muttered, fewer than 40 people looking sidelong at their companions, as if they might find shapeshifters in their midst. "I am your prince, the rightful Earl of House Vernius. Trust me. I will not let you down. Soon you will be liberated, and Ix will return to the way it was when my father Dominic ruled the planet." The people gave a low cheer, and someone shouted, "Will we be free of the Tleilaxu and the Sardaukar?" Romber turned to face the man. "The Emperor's soldiers have no more right to be here than the Tleilaxu." His face became grim. "Besides, House Corino has committed its own crimes against the Vernius family. Observe." Gurney stepped forward and activated a small hollow projector. The solido image of a gaunt, beaten man appeared, sitting in dank shadows. "Before she married my father, Lady Shando Vernius was a concubine of Emperor Elrud IX. Unknown to us until recently, she also bore the old emperor an illegitimate son. Under the name of Tyros Repha, the boy was raised in secret by the gentle docent of Talagari. Repha was therefore my half-brother, a member of House Vernius through the distaff line." Mutters of surprise rippled through the chamber. The Ixians all knew of the deaths of Dominic, Shando, and Kylea, but they had not guessed there might be another member of the family. "These words were recorded in the imperial prison by our ambassador in exile, Kamar Pilru. This is the last speech Tyros Repha ever made, before Emperor Shaddam Corino executed him. Even I never met my own half-brother." He played Repha's impassioned words to growing moans of anger and outrage. Apparently the man had not previously known his connection to House Vernius, But that did not matter to the rebellious people as they listened. When the image faded, people came forward, as if to embrace the air in which the holograms had been projected. Afterward, even with the power with which the doomed Repha delivered his words, Romber spoke his own piece, finding strength and passion that would have made a master jongleur proud. He did more to inflame rebellious thoughts than any reasoned plan another man could have put together. In the emotion-packed sentences, Prince Romber pleaded for justice. "Now go forth and tell others," he urged. Their time had been curtailed here, and the prince had to take greater risks in his work. "Be careful, but enthusiastic. We don't dare reveal our plans to the Tleilaxu and the Sardaukar. Not yet." Hearing the names of their hated enemies, several Ixians spat on the stone floor. In a grim mutter of outrage that built to a barely controlled crescendo, the recruits cried, "Victory on Ix!" Quickly, Kater and Gurney whisked the prince away through side tunnels to hide him before the wrong people noticed the disturbance and came to investigate. Days later, still full of questions and uncertainties, the two infiltrators watched a chronometer and prepared themselves for a labor shift to change, so that they could slip out and talk to other potential rebels. A faint glow-globe flickered overhead in their small rock chamber. "Everything's going as well as we could have hoped, given our shortened timetable," Romber said. "Still, Duke Leto is operating in a blackout of information," Gurney said. "I wish we'd had a way of contacting him to tell him that we're going ahead." Romber responded with a quote from the Orange Catholic Bible, knowing his companion's fondness for the scripture. "If you have no faith in your friends, then you have no true friends. Rest assured, Leto won't let us down." The men tensed as they heard a commotion in the hall, followed by furtive footsteps. Then Kater appeared, his work shirt and hands bloodied. "I need to change quickly and clean up." He looked back and forth, fearing detection. "I was forced to kill another Tleilaxu. He was just a lab worker, but he had cornered one of our new recruits and was interrogating him. I know he would have given away our plan." "Did anybody see you?" Gurney asked. "No, but our recruit fled, leaving me with the mess to clean up." Kater hung his head, shook it, then raised his chin again, his eyes proud but sad. "I will kill as many as necessary. Tleilaxu blood cleanses my hands." Gurney was concerned. "This is bad news, our fourth near discovery in only 3 days. The Tleilaxu are bound to be suspicious." "That's why we dare not delay," Romber said. "Everyone must know the timetable and be ready. I will lead them. I am their prince." Gurney's inkvine scar reddened as he scowled. "I don't like this." Kater began wiping his hands and scrubbing under the fingernails. He seemed resigned to the danger. "We Ixians have been massacred before, but our determination will prevail. Our prayers will prevail." The search for an ultimate, unifying explanation for all things is a fruitless endeavor, a step in the wrong direction. This is why, in a universe of chaos, we must constantly adapt. Bene Gesserit, Azhar Book. The Ishak Hall of Magnificent Documents was lost among the extravagant monuments on Kaitain. During his youth, Shaddam had spent much time in elaborate diversions in the city, but he'd had little interest in old papers and manifestos. Still, an official imperial visit to the hoary old museum seemed an appropriate diversion now. Why is the guild so upset? In preparation for Shaddam's arrival, the Ishak Hall had been swept clean of surveillance devices. For this one day, all teachers, historians, and students had been forbidden to enter the building, thus permitting the Emperor full access. Even so, he was accompanied by his retinue of guards and so many court functionaries that the echoing corridors felt crowded. Though the guild had requested this secret meeting, Shaddam had arranged for the appropriate time and place. Long ago, when Emperor Ishak XV designed and built the museum, it was one of the most spectacular constructions in the burgeoning imperial city. But in the intervening millennia, the Hall of Magnificent Documents had been swallowed by ever more impressive architecture. Now it was difficult to find it among the congestion of governmental structures. The senior curator greeted the emperor and his retinue with embarrassing enthusiasm and gushing formality. Shaddam mumbled appropriate responses as the obsequious man proudly displayed a number of ancient handwritten journals, the personal diaries of past Corino emperors. Considering all the time-consuming duties that required his attention, Shaddam couldn't imagine any skilled ruler having the luxury to write such ponderous musings for the sake of posterity. Like Ishak XV, who had tried to inscribe his name in the chronicles of the Imperium by constructing this once impressive museum, every Padishah ruler sought a special place in history. With Amal, Shaddam vowed to attain his fame through something greater than a handwritten diary or a dusty old building. What can the guild possibly want of me? Have they learned more about the tainted spice from Beakal? Though he still hadn't decided what to do with Arrakis, as soon as he succeeded in monopolizing spice commerce with his inexpensive substitute, Shaddam intended to lay the foundation for future generations of House Corino. During the tour, the hall curator showed him constitutional documents, oaths of conditional independence, and declarations of planetary loyalty dating back to when the growing Imperium was consolidating itself. A carefully preserved parchment of the first guild charter, supposedly one of only 11 extant copies in the universe, sat bathed under filter lights and a protective shield. One display case held a copy of the Ajar book, the Bene Gesserit volume of secrets, written in a long-forgotten language. Finally, standing before a pair of tall, locked doors, the curator stepped aside. "In here, Your Majesty, we hold our greatest treasure, the cornerstone of imperial civilization." His voice grew whispery with awe. "We have the original document of the Great Convention." Shaddam tried to look impressed. He knew the legalities of the Great Convention, of course, and had studied the precedents, but he had never taken the time to read the actual wording. "You have made arrangements for me to view it alone, at my leisure?"
"Of course, sire. In a completely private and secure chamber."
The curator's eyes flickered with concern and overprotectiveness. Shaddam wondered what the man thought he might do. If an emperor ripped the document to shreds, would that not be a historical event in itself? A smile stole across his lips. Shaddam knew, though few others did, that this hallowed relic was not actually the original, but was instead a clever forgery, since the original had been lost in the atomic blaze on Seleucia. But it was a symbol, and people could be fanatical about such things. Shaddam pondered this as the doors swung wide, and he stepped into an isolated room, moving with proud imperial grace, but not speed. He felt mounting dread. "The Spacing Guild has rarely demanded anything of me, and now they insist on this secret meeting. What do they want?" The guild had received exorbitant bribes after each attack on a spice-hoarding world, and they had seemed satisfied with them. He stepped into the windowless chamber and looked at the shrine podium that displayed the fraudulent document, complete with singed brown edges to maintain the fiction that it had been rescued from the Seleucian Holocaust. He wished Hasimir Fenring were there with him, instead of away on Ix again. With problems compounding in his great spice war, Shaddam needed good suggestions. He heaved a deep sigh. I am on my own. In due course, especially now that Fenring had disavowed all his misgivings, Shaddam planned to announce his Amal to the unsuspecting Choam and the Guild. No doubt the economic fallout would be chaotic, but the Emperor was strong, and with the secret of synthetic spice, he could endure any sanctions. But he would have to block the regular channels of Melange. Arrakis. What to do with Arrakis? He would either destroy the desert planet, or station Sardaukar there on a permanent basis to prevent the Guild from obtaining their own spice. This was essential during the transition, in order to force the Imperium into purchasing his Amal. As soon as the doors sealed behind him, a secret entrance slid aside in the far left wall. A tall man with pink eyes and a dandelion puff of white hair took a step into the room, but hesitated and glanced around suspiciously. He wore a Guild protective suit made of polymer leatherel, rigged with tubes and pulleys that connected to a pressurized tank on his back. Spice gas seeped through evaporators around his collar, so that the Guild legate's face was wreathed in a halo of pungent orange melange gas. He came closer, albino eyes sharp, locking onto the Emperor's features. Behind him followed five companions, smaller guildsmen in identical suits, but without melange packs. They were hairless, pale-skinned dwarves, their bone structures distorted, as if someone had turned their skeletons to clay and then squeezed. They carried speaking grids and recording apparatus. Shaddam stiffened. This is supposed to be between us alone, Legate. I have brought no guards. In the confined space, the Emperor picked up the strong cinnamon odor of spice. Neither have I, said the Guild Legate in a phlegmy voice, softened by the thick melange. These men are extensions of me, parts of the Guild. All of the Guild is closely interconnected, whereas you are alone to represent House Carino. The Guild would be wise not to forget my position. He caught himself, not wanting to begin any blustery displays that might bring repercussions, subtle or overt. You requested this meeting. Please get to the point quickly, as I am a busy man. We have reached conclusions regarding the flawed spice that led to serious navigator errors and the death of a guildsman. We now know the source. Shaddam's brow furrowed. I thought you said the contaminated melange came from Bayakal. I have that place under quarantine already. Bayakal merely sold it to us. The Guild Legate was grim. Spice comes from Arrakis. Spice comes from the Harkonnens. The albino sucked in another breath of the curling vapors around his face.